This is Smeagol. When I'm not trying to protect my precious from wicked, tricksy hobbitses, I'm listening to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. They talk about many things that you filthy fanboys will love to listen to. And while you're listening, make sure you follow them on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and any social media on which you can find them. What is Twitter? Is it a bird? Is it tasty? Can I eat it? I can't eat Twitter. Smeagol is so sad. Smeagol wants to eat Twitter. Well, if I can't eat Twitter, I'll go listen to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. It will make Smeagol happy again. Happy, happy, happy! Just make sure you don't touch my precious while I'm listening.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Well, shall we begin this podcast, this interview?
Sure.
Great. Well, let's start off by saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn, and I am on the line with what I consider to be, and who is, a very distinguished guest. We have Stephen E. Gordon on the line. He is probably best known to fans of comics as the character designer, director, the sort of main man behind the X-Men Evolution series. But I was looking at your internet movie database credits before I hopped on the line. And yeah, you've done a lot of work, sir. You are very active.
I'm very old.
Well, I don't know about that. Very old, very talented, very active. I mean, you have done, I was just going down the list. You've worked on everything from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to Cool World to The Swan Princess. You're still currently working, it looks like, on something called Blazing Samurai.
That never made it past... first pass on storyboards, I believe. I think that's pretty much a done.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, it's on your credits page. So let's. In any case, well, you've done everything from like SpongeBob SquarePants and, you know, just Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, there's just like a huge list of credits. And I should also say that for Part-Time Fanboy, you are actually the very first interview that I ever conducted. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. You're the very first interview I ever did. And if you remember, I mean, I re-listened to some of that interview about that happened like 6 years ago. I can't believe it. Time has flown by. But sure. When we first did the interview, something happened to the sound file and you were nice enough to come back on and like redo the interview. So I've already interviewed you twice and this is our third time together. So I should say thank you for that again, because you were very kind. And you weren't the first interview to appear on the site, but you were the very first one that I did for this podcast. I'm just always thankful to you for doing that. So, you have a new comic out, correct? I saw the announcement like on your Facebook page, and it looks like it's showing up in shops. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I'd love to. It's called Headhunter.
Uh-huh.
It's by a group called Sit Comics, which is sort of a play on sitcoms because the creator of the publisher and the guy who writes most of them was a sitcom writer, or is still, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
And so he met me several years ago at, I think, San Diego, maybe, one of the cons, and asked me to do this particular run of comics for him, this Headhunter. And I agreed, and it's been fun. Unfortunately, it's taken me a long time to get through it with my day jobs and everything else. But
sure.
It's about a homeless guy who becomes a vigilante, and we kind of just pick up in the middle where he's already doing his vigilante stuff. He accidentally stumbles upon a baby that he has to care for.
Oh.
So it's like a kind of a homeless superhero with a baby.
Yeah.
Idea and stuff. So.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. And Sid Comics, I think I've seen this guy like at Long Beach Comic Con. I think he may have actually been boothing across from me and my friend at one point.
Okay.
And is it that company, I can't remember exactly what the sort of hook was, but it was that he was kind of producing comics with that sort of like 80s feel or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. And what he does also is he calls them binge books. It's like three comics in a book, all for the low price of $3.99 or something around those lines.
Oh, wow.
Getting like 64 pages for $3.99.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember meeting him. He was really nice. He was a really nice guy. I can't remember his name. What did you mention his name?
Yeah, Darren Henry.
Darren Henry. Yeah, I met him a couple of times during a weekend at Long Beach. And yeah, those comics looked like really interesting. And it was a really sort of like nice twist on like what he was doing.
Yeah, it's kind of he's got a whole series of them. They range from superheroes to kind of like Archie and Jughead type comics to zombie comics. And he's really got quite a big horror. It's a lot.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I'm just my Headhunter comic is just a tiny piece of it. It's connected with some of the other superhero comics, but it's he's got tons of other things that definitely worth checking out. And a lot of them are in stores and such. Headhunter, I believe, drops Wednesday into a lot of stores.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, you had said on your Facebook page that Collector's Paradise was going to be carrying them. And they're sort of, they've just opened up a shop in North Hollywood now. I guess taking over for Blastoff Comics that used to be there. And they have one in Winnetka and Pasadena. So they're kind of like covering the whole valley. So that's great. This Wednesday they'll be in there. And is it something that's also being released through Diamond? Is there like an order number or something?
That I'm not real clear on. I mean, that's kind of above my pay grade. You know that they're available on Comixology and so forth. So, he's covering a lot of bases.
Sure.
And it would surprise me if he's going through Diamond too. But I can't say for sure. I don't know that.
Yeah. And do you know what their website is, like off the top of your head? Like, is there a place that you can?
I think if you Google Sit Comics, SIT Comics, you'll be able to find it. He's got a couple of Facebook pages, and he's got I assume that he's got a website. I can't say that I do that much exploring. I've been too busy.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine that the easiest way to find him would be Sit Comics. And I think I had wanted to approach him for an interview a while back, but I just never followed up on it.
I'm sure he'd be glad to do it.
Yeah, no, I would love to. I mean, I think sometimes it's like I approach people for interviews and as you just said, I get busy and then other things come up and I forget. So nothing personal against the creator of Sit Comics if I did approach him, but, So one of the things that like I've always because I follow you on Facebook, I approach you at conventions and you're always super nice to me and you're kind enough to sign my like X-Men Evolution statues whenever I come up to you. And I think I may have like one or two more that I have to find you at a convention to get signed. But because I I've said it before when I've interviewed you and I've said it to you in person. But and I actually have two of your original works in my home office, But yeah, I just love your artwork and you know, your talent and stuff like that. And I even think you had done like a live session of like teaching online, and I watched you on there too. So I'm a big fan. And I've actually asked like you in person, like, when are you going to teach, or when are you going to have like actual classes? But beyond that, you know, I've always wondered why you aren't doing sort of like more comic stuff, you know, and I'm really happy that you've sort of like done this, because I've seen, what was it? You did like a Tarzan book online, correct?
Yeah, I did a Tarzan, well, an Edgar Rice Burroughs series called The Eternal Savage that was online.
Yeah.
We're hoping eventually it makes it to print form, but it's kind of like a, you know, the old Sunday newspaper comics where it was all, you know, big splash pages and stuff. But I did that for several years. That wrapped up a while ago, and I also did a segment in a Jungle Tales of Tarzan, which is what you may be thinking of.
Okay.
Kind of getting the two crossed over. I mean, they were both done by Edgar Rice Burroughs, obviously, but there was a book put out by Dark Horse based on the Jungle Tales of Tarzan, which were the stories of Tarzan as a youth. And I did one segment of that, and that was several years back.
Yeah. And is that something that people can still find online?
I believe so. I believe that, well, the Eternal Savage can be found online. If you go to Edgar Rice Burroughs Comics or Google that, you will easily be able to find it. I believe there's a whole bunch of them, and I think it's like a subscription service for like $1.99 a month, and you can look at as many as you want and whatever, and it's supposedly they're supposed to come out weekly or monthly or something with new strips and stuff. So that, and the Jungle Tales, I assume, is probably still available in comic shops. I don't know. It was a hardcover Dark Horse book.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm going to have to track that down. I didn't even know that that was in print. So, oh, wow. Obviously, I'm not following closely enough, I guess.
Years ago, so maybe it's, you know, slid under the radar.
Sure.
And currently, I'm just helping someone who's developing a series or whatever, and they thought the best way to do it would be to create a graphic novel version of it first.
Sure.
Doing that, but I don't know if that'll ever see print or whatnot, but, you know, hopefully it'll land on people's desks, and eventually the project will land on your TV.
Sure. I mean, that seems to be the way these days, is everyone wants to.
It sure seems to be, yeah. These guys decided to go that route. They thought it would be easier.
Sure.
But they've got a good idea here. And in the meantime, you know, I'm just doing my usual animation work and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking for new comic work. If anyone wants to approach me, I'm always willing to talk. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, so you would have, you're open to like comics projects? Because I think the last time we spoke, you had said that you might have been too busy and stuff like that, and I was just wondering, like, as far as like you're working in comics, like, let's say the Manhunter thing,
Headhunter, excuse me, I apologize. That's all right.
But as far as Headhunter is concerned, is that something that you have like a creative stake in, or are you just a hired gun? Like, is it creator owned? How did that sort of deal, or how did they approach you with that?
I'm just a hired pair of hands on that.
Gotcha.
I mean, if something further happens with it, I'm sure, you know, maybe I'll see something in the future. But at this point, it's pretty much I was the artist hired to do it, and he paid me a nice fee, and you know, that's as far as it goes.
Gotcha.
Or will come of it for him, because like you said, he's a nice guy, and I hope that, you know, he's got some good ideas and seems to be doing pretty well overall from what I gather.
Sure.
Kind of comics. But yeah, I'm always interested in stuff. I mean, yes, this very moment in time, I'm busy, but I'm always looking to shuffle stuff around and whatnot. You know, in 2 weeks, I may not be as busy. You know, it's just the way the business goes, so.
Sure, absolutely. And that's sort of another bit of questions that I have for you, and maybe I can approach that a little bit later on. But sure. As far as, you know, I guess for me, it's just really interesting, because I will say it again, and I've said it, you know, a big fan of your artwork, and I would love to see more of it. And so what I mean, as sort of like a bit of like, you know, I create my own projects. I've worked on like small projects on my own. And I know that, and speaking to other creators as well, I know how hard it is to sort of like make comics. I think for a lot of people, they don't realize like all the panel work and backgrounds and stuff like that. It can be, as opposed to like, say, like drawing covers and stuff like that for, you know, comics or pinups and things like that. So I guess generally speaking, is it more of sort of like a time issue? Because I'm wondering, or an awareness that maybe you might not be available? Because I honestly don't see why publishers wouldn't be like knocking down your door, especially somebody with your pedigree, if I might say, you know.
I think it's a taste thing. And, you know, I'd been speaking earlier on with years and years ago before I even did any of these things with someone.
Sure.
And they kind of looked at my stuff and thought it was interesting, but it was too animation looking for their taste.
That's impossible. No way.
Yeah. I mean, so purposely, I've kind of geared down a little and forced my look into a little more harder edge for the comics and stuff. But I think that's just a matter of, you know, what the subject matter is and whatnot. And, you know, it varies. You know, I can go very realistic to a large degree too, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it just depends. And yes, there, it is a time situation, you know. Obviously, yeah, I don't have full time to devote to doing comics, which if you're on any type of serious comic deadline is probably a mandate. But I, you know, if they're flexible, I'm flexible, you know.
Sure.
And I can, if there's a deadline, like, you know, towards the end of the Headhunter, I've kind of been, you know, dabbling with it for years and stuff, taking forever. And the, you know, Darren wasn't pushing too hard or anything else. So I just, you know, it just always took a back seat. But when he finally said, okay, we'd like to have this for San Diego, you know, I bore down and, you know, got the stuff done. And, you know, I got finished like half a comic in a month or whatever, which for me, pretty good, you know, time restraints and stuff. So
it
could be done, and it just depends on the situation. I mean, I am kind of thinking that comics would be a good situation for when I retire out of animation, which I would hope to do in, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line. I figure that would be a nice way to earn additional income.
Sure.
And fun along with it, because, you know, I enjoy doing the work.
Yeah.
It's just having the time and it not being able to pay well enough at this point for me to do it full time and to throw off my animation career, you know.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, I mean, that sort of seems to be the way things have been going, particularly for indie comic creators, where it seems like everyone is doing the work after their, you know, daily work, you know,
sure,
their day job and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, so for somebody like you whose, you know, day job is, you know, storyboarding or directing or animation, you know, that sort of thing. Is it hard to sort of like keep drawing like when you get home? Like, it, or are you the type of person that just can pick up a pencil and just draw whenever? Like, or do you need to sort of like decompress, like that sort of thing?
It varies. I mean, what I prefer is if it's a different type of job function.
Uh-huh.
Like, storyboarding during the day, I prefer to come home and do character design or comics, as opposed to doing more storyboarding during the day, during the evening. You know, it helps to break it up. I do currently right now, I'm storyboarding during the day, and then I come home and do some storyboarding as well.
Sure.
So, you know, sometimes it doesn't line up the way I prefer, but I prefer, like I said, to mix and match as to what I'm doing.
Sure. You
know, as opposed to doing, you know, 12 hours of the same job function or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure. And what would you see creating comics most like as far as like the animation industry is concerned? Would you say it's closest to like a lot of people that I've talked to, like maybe storyboarding, like that sort of thing?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely more storyboarding without all the nuance that storyboarding entails. You know, and when you're storyboarding, you have to worry about how cuts line up and where the eye is and everything. In comics, you know, there's other concerns. There's layout concerns for a whole page and stuff, as to making the whole page visually interesting. making sure there's a flow to it, which is not something you do in storyboarding. You just worry from one panel to the next, you know, one scene to the next and stuff. And plus in storyboarding, depending on what project you're on, you sometimes have to worry about creating story content and dialogue and everything else. Whereas in comics, at least at this point in my career, I'm not creating any of that in comics. Because, you know, following a script and, you know, seeing how best I can do that. But yeah, it's similar to storyboarding, the fact that you have to do the character and the background and, you know, have kind of a whole world view of that panel at the time. So
sure. And I mean, I've seen your stuff at conventions and you working at conventions. I mean, you seem to be very fast. Like, I mean, I would imagine that that's a skill that you have to pick up, like in storyboarding, if that's what you were doing consistently. Like, how many pages a day would you be able to draw if you were drawing like a comic book, like let's just say full time? Like, if you were like, hey, I have the world at my feet, I can just draw, you know, comics all day long, how many pages do you think you would get done?
Well, I don't know. That's interesting. I've never had to do that. So,
gotcha.
But I would think that as a part time thing, I was doing the crush for San Diego, I was doing a page, I think, every 2 days.
Oh, wow.
So I think I could probably step that up to 2 pages a day. I think I was doing it full time. Yeah, depending on the page, of course.
Sure, yeah. Oh, yeah, how complex it is.
And what research is involved with what every page, or, you know, it just depends. But I would think that 2 pages a day, and I don't know whether or not that's a good speed or not as far as comics. I've never talked to anyone about who does it full time, whether or not, you know, what they do.
Sure. So. Oh, really? You've never just sort of done research as far as like what?
Yeah, I've talked to comic book guys, but you know, to be honest, I've never thought to ask that question, but it is a good question. What they do a day.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, I've seen you drawing online and I've seen you drawing in person and I've seen the amount of commissions that you get done at conventions, just like seeing, you know, you like posting your artwork and you're doing like full, you know, pencils and inks and colors, you know, with markers. And you seem to be like really fast as far as like that stuff is concerned. So I'm always impressed and I'm like, this guy could probably just start banging stuff out if he had all day.
And I might be underselling myself. Maybe I'd go faster than 2 a day. I mean, like being realistic and undersell what I think I could do.
Sure.
This age, I could do 10 pages a day and find out it's like, no way in the world is that even humanly possible. You know, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah. And have you ever, because obviously you've worked in like, I mean, you've worked in story departments, right? Like developing series, obviously like X-Men Evolution and stuff like that. So you obviously have like writing skills. Has there ever been a point in your mind where you've sort of maybe not wanting to take on other people's comic work, but sort of like your own creation or like maybe develop it for the web or like that sort of thing? Has that ever sort of like popped into your head where
I've thought about it. I think at least initially I'd want to do it with someone who's more experienced than myself, just as far as a writing, you know, have a writer and, you know, we kind of collaborate or something. I think that would be a better initial way to go because, you know, I've got ideas and stuff. It's just, I'm not sure the best way to necessarily tell the stories and, you know, so I think having another, and that's the one thing in story when you're doing on features and stuff and, you know, other projects like X-Men Evolution, you have other people collaborating. It's a collaborative, animation is very collaborative.
And sure.
I think I work best that way, but, you know, I may grow out, be able to reach out and do other things too down the line. Without the time to do it, it's hard to say.
Yeah. Sure. Have you ever sort of, and you know, this may be ignorance on my part as far as like the sort of span of your career, but have you ever tried to sort of like pitch your own animated series or like sell something to a network or create something like, you know, fully born from like your own mind or that sort of thing?
Well, I'm working with a partner and we're pitching some different things around town. You know, some of them are very adult oriented archer lines, and some of them are much more kid-friendly and such. So we are going around and pitching things. Some of them I've got more of a hand in, and some of them are based on other someone else's idea that we developed into a animated pitch and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, point, I actually had a project that I had optioned from a relative famous writer that I was
cool.
around town pitching, and everyone was interested. It was just, it was like, you know, over 10 years ago, and at that point, it would have had to be PG-13 at least, or R.
Uh-huh.
Even though everyone thought it would do well, no one wanted to jump in and say, yeah, we'll do it. They wanted to wait till someone else did it first.
Yeah.
And then follow suit.
Yeah.
As far as doing an R-rated animated project. So, yeah, I've been developing and pitching stuff for years. And as of right now, nothing's happened. But, you know, I'm still working on it.
Sure. Have you ever thought of, like, crowdfunding or crowdsourcing, like Kickstarter or that sort of thing? Because
for those things, yeah, I've been involved in a couple of minor things that did or didn't. Some went okay and some didn't. I am thinking about doing crowdsourcing for a book based on my first two sketchbooks, Expressions and Attitudes, or Attitudes and Expressions, or whatever I call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And compiling those into it, because people still want to find those, and they've been sold out for years and stuff.
Yeah.
I was thinking about crowdfunding for that type of thing, but not specifically for animated projects or anything, because, I mean that would have to take crowdfunding to a much larger degree. You know, when someone says, yeah, I'm going to crowdfund and put together a TV series, it's like, no, millions and millions of dollars to do that. You could crowdfund to put together a teaser or a pitch or something, which I'm not sure why anyone would support that necessarily, because what are they going to get out of it other than to say, hey, I helped pay for that.
You know, sure.
If it happens, you're not going to really pay them back. And
yeah.
If it doesn't happen, they're definitely not going to get money back. You know, it's, you know, when people put money into a pitch that you want to do, it's with the intent of recouping their money. At
yeah,
some point
of course.
Down the line.
Yeah.
And crowdfunding isn't set up that way.
Yeah. Well, just to be clear, I was thinking something more of the lines like a graphic novel or that sort of thing, because I just helped fund something on like Indiegogo, and that creator like ended up, I mean, obviously he might've had some, he obviously had a following of years and years, but like it closed at something like $700,000. And I was just astounded by that. And not saying it would or it wouldn't or that sort of thing, but it seems like, you know, I'm friendly with a couple of other people on Facebook and in person, people who have been around for, you know, years in the animation or comics industry and stuff like that. And I know that putting together like a Kickstarter is, you know, hard work and stuff like that, or can be, you know, daunting. But it seems to me that you have more than enough of a following to like be able to pull something like that together. So I'm happy about the sketchbook and stuff, but I own all those. It's like, you know, so like, you know, there's a part of
you
me
don't
that's,
want another.
No, I mean, well, I would obviously help fund it because I'm a fan, you know, and, you know, put it on my webpage or whatever, like whenever you do get to it. But as far as like creating your own, and you know, you're sort of like talking about like retirement, which, you know, I don't know whether to look at that as good or bad, you know, being that I'm not even sort of, you know, would that be more work from you? I would hope so, like to see, but.
I don't think I could sit around and do nothing.
Sure, sure.
But and at that point, then definitely I'd be looking at those types of things.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hesitant because I've heard also how much work it
sure.
is. A Kickstarter, and I'm hesitant to get too deep into something and then not being able to fulfill at a logical time frame, you know. And I've backed a lot of projects too.
Yeah.
Most of them, I'd say, have come through, but some of them is like, yeah, I'm probably not going to hear back from those people at all.
Sure, sure, sure.
But
I mean,
I wouldn't want to be one of those people.
Yeah, know. Yeah. And here's the thing is I don't want to seem like presumptuous either as to like, you know, what your work you know, family balance, time, you know, all that stuff is like what you're doing. But there's, I come across a lot of creators at cons too, who, you know, to me, it seems like, you know, you can, you're able to bang something out with like a sketch that to someone like me, it's like, oh man, that would have taken me, you know, a bunch of time, because obviously, I don't know if you've seen, like, I like to draw, but I'm nowhere near sort of the skill level as a lot of people, like say you, or, you know, other artists that I see online. But for me, it seems like even to just like sort of put together a quick like web comic and have it and be like, hey, I put this up, you know, it does that seem like it would be something even worth your time to do for, you know, yourself and like your fans and just get a story out there? Or do you feel like, you know, because I've spoken to other creators about this sort of thing, do you feel like that sort of thing might be time wasted as opposed to like you're being able to do commissions and, you know, work on actual projects that bring in money? Or did I just answer my own question? Does that make sense?
No, I get you. And frankly, if Kickstarter is successful, especially in the type of success that you described in that other one.
Yeah.
Which I can't assume I would be able to generate those, that type of interest. But still, even if I was trying to do a Kickstarter for $30,000 and I made $40,000 instead, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, that becomes worth my time and stuff. So definitely.
Yeah,
you know, as long as it's paying for itself and even on top, you know, then yeah. So it is something I've been debating and stuff.
Yeah.
Right now, it's, I haven't found that type of time, but it's one of those things I keep kicking around in the back of my head.
You know,
I'm a very deadline motivated type of person. And so having an open-ended like Kickstarters and such, I'm not sure would be the best way. If I could set up where I have deadlines for myself and I have to meet these deadlines or I'm in trouble, then I think I'd be more successful. Just like at cons, I have deadlines for those commissions.
Sure.
By the end of the con, 90% of them have to be finished, and then the others have to be shipped out shortly after. And I kick myself every day if I'm not working on a commission that I owe, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I was just talking about like putting up like a webcomic page like on your site or something like that. Like for like you would work on something like really quickly, and it wouldn't even be for, you know, disregarding the Kickstarter and all that stuff. I don't know. It just seems to me like, and again, it's me being presumptive of like skill and talent and, you know, time and stuff like that. It just seems like there's a lot of comic artists who, and storyboard artists and animation artists out there. And maybe it's just also a sense of like how much stuff there is out there that I'm not like, you know, taking into regard in my own brain. But it just seems like you would be able to do something, you know, that isn't necessarily fully formed, but put it up on the web and be like, hey, this is something that's going on, you know, to sort of draw attention to your story and not necessarily have it have to be at, you know, complete, you know, because I look at like sketches that you do, you know, and probably if I were to see like a doodle book, like I would be like, yeah, that's good enough. Like, this is great. Like, I don't, you know, I don't need the, you know, but then I know that, again, speaking to other creators, they're like, oh, I would never do that, you know, because I don't want to seem like I'm phoning stuff in and stuff like that. But the frustration in my brain is like, oh, my God, no, this is great. Am I making that sort of sense, or am I just talking in circles?
I get you. Yeah, and I don't know. I see both sides of that argument, and I understand it. And I don't know. It's just one of those things that I'll at some point have to make a decision on, too.
Sure.
Just decide whether or not, because I've seen other artists, and I'll never pronounce his name, but the guy who does, he's right now doing a Harley book or whatever.
Harley Quinn?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I don't know off the top of my head.
It's his name's, I'll see if I can locate it offhand, but I'll never pronounce his name because it's, I don't know what he is, Norwegian or, anyway, and he's done his own indie stuff, and you know, I've followed him for years and stuff. And he does, and his wife does the similar stuff, where they put in progress, work in progress stuff all the time up and stuff. And people are excited. And I get that. I'm not sure that my stuff's up to that type of level or not. Or, I mean, I'm glad you seem to like it and stuff, but I don't know. It's just one of those things that I'll have to kind of debate and figure out. And, you know, a lot of it will be time when I have time and free time. And unfortunately, a lot of my free time when I don't have something to come home and do freelance on. I spend the time trying to find that freelance.
Gotcha.
It's right now I'm on sort of a treadmill for the next few years, and I want to try to fit in comic stuff.
Yeah.
And I can when it pays is the best way for it to work.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
without a paycheck, it makes it more difficult to address.
Sure.
For time.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry if it seems like I'm henpecking you.
No, fine. I mean, it gets me thinking because, you know, some of these things have been in the back of my mind. And I just haven't addressed them in any serious manner. But, you know, it's always good to hear someone else talking about it.
Sure.
It makes me think. So.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because some things have come up, and I in the previous interview too, something like 6 years ago, I can't imagine, like, I kind of keep hearing you say, like, oh, it might not be good enough, or, oh, you know, this person, it, you know, it's sort of like up to taste and stuff like that. And as somebody who really regards your work as like fantastic, it seems like even though you've had this like amazing career in animation and you've worked on a lot of stuff and, you know, people still approach you at convention because, you know, your booth is not small. Like it's a big like convention booth. Like I'm always impressed. Like I'm always like, oh wow, his booth is big, and you've got all the prints and stuff like that. Do I still sense sort of like and if this is too personal a question or you know you can say so, but do you still have like an insecurity to your own work or like what you do? Do artists of your sort of level still suffer from that sort of
thing? I would hope. At least I know I do, and I would hope most artists think that they're constantly working at getting better.
Sure.
You know, and I look at other people's work, and some of them I think, oh, I could do that easily or better than that. But
sure.
Then others I look at and go, God, I could only dream of being that good. You know, like Adam Hughes and, Brian Hitch. And it's like, okay, I'm not anywhere in that ballpark, you know, my mind at least, you know. I know I'm good at certain things in the animation world, as far as character design, and I'm a good story person and stuff like that. But you know, comics, I'm pretty green. You know, I'm every time I do a page, I will, you know, sometimes go back and I can revise this, make this work better, or you know, so that's I'm not someone who's just like banging out ideas and it nails it every time, or you know, I've got some. To be blunt, insecurities about it, which, you know, I don't know that that's a bad thing, at least.
Sure.
So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're always sort of striving to be better, I would guess. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, there's also a part of me, though, that listens to you and I'm like, no, you're great, man. Come on. You know, I'm kind of like, you know, a little blown away by that. I mean, not that, you know, it's good to be humble and stuff like that. But, you know, you're talking about Adam Hughes, who I agree, you know, is an amazing artist, but he does mostly sort of like pinup stuff. And when I look at your stuff, or I look at some of the stuff you do, you're doing backgrounds, you're doing, you know, there's a lot of like interesting different poses. You're drawing not just females, you're drawing males, you know, you're drawing, you know what I'm saying? Like obviously there is an aspect to Adam Hughes' work where it seems like there's airbrushing or, you know, I don't know his process, and I am a fan of his type of thing, but it is sort of like cheesecake a little bit or most of it. That's not putting down cheesecake.
Yeah. He also does other great stuff. I mean, I see his, you know, and he does do runs and, you know, short runs in comics and stuff. But yeah, you know, I think, I mean, his sense of getting even beyond the pinup work that he does, but even getting past that, I think even the little jokes that he puts on some of these commissions that he does, I think are brilliant. And I think I wish I could be that funny.
Yeah.
But I think he does all types of, you know, backgrounds and stuff. I think in a lot of ways he does some magnificent stuff. And I'm just in awe of virtually everything he does. And I don't know if he still does it, but for a long time I heard that he did all of his Photoshop stuff with just a mouse.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know if that's still the case. I look at it and think, that's insane. Why at least get a tablet and a stylus?
Yeah, why would you do that to yourself? That sounds like self-torture.
But I think it's the way he learned to do it, and he's comfortable. For years and years, I used to do Photoshop without a Cintiq. I'd just use a tablet.
Yeah.
I'd scan stuff in, and then I'd manipulate it with a tablet or whatever, and you know, I got very good at it. The hand-eye coordination really gets very succinct.
Sure.
And taught.
Yeah.
But now that I've moved on to Cintiqs and everything else, and it's a much simpler world for me.
Yeah.
So that's still the case. But that's beside the point. I just think that his stuff, what he does better than anyone else. In fact, I don't know if I already told you the story, but when I was doing X-Men Evolution, and I wasn't quite sure where to go with it, and I wasn't really at that point the character designer. I was just one of the directors, and we were all kind of searching for something in pre-production. The producer, Boyd Kirkland, showed me some Adam Hughes stuff.
Yeah.
And specifically that Wizards cover he did with all those superheroines on it. And how each of them had a different face. In animation, generally speaking, everyone has the same body and face, and it's just like a template.
Yeah.
Superhero stuff. Very rarely does anyone go to any stretch to make them individuals. And when he showed me that, it's like, okay, that little light bulb in my head, turned on a light bulb, and that's what I credit some of my work on X-Men Evolution with, is like, purposely making each of the characters individuals. Not one of them has the same face type, not one of them has the same body type. And I give kudos to that drawing that Adam Hughes, or that Wizards cover that Adam Hughes did for that. So, I just think the world of his work.
Sure. But yeah, and I'm on the same page.
Range.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I hate Adam Hughes. I'm on the same page, although I have a 12-year-old daughter, so I can't have like my office, all over the place with Adam Hughes. Obviously, that's not all he does, but but that's really interesting to me, because like what you say about Adam Hughes tends to be how I sort of like look at what your stuff, is like, because I have I bought an original from you a long time ago. It's Superman and Wonder Woman, and they're standing next to each other, and it's fantastic. It's amazing. Yeah. And it's in my office, and I'm a big like Captain America fan, and people who don't know me or have not been to, which is probably a lot of people that listen to this podcast, but I have like a couple of like different like Captain America shields in my office, and that Superman Wonder Woman is like amongst them, like on that wall where the Captain America things are. And I had a friend come over, was visiting from the East Coast, and they looked at it and they were like, "Oh, did you do that? Was that yours?" And I was like, "No." I was like, no. Like, I probably couldn't do, like, so, for somebody like me, and I understand, the work, we all have like people that we, whose work we love, and we're like, "Oh, wow, how do they do that like so well?" Like, to me, like, you are that sort of like Adam Hughes. You know what I'm saying? So
I appreciate the being put up there. I don't see it, but I'm glad someone does.
Well, I'm just, and you're talking about X-Men Evolution, and I don't want to sort of like pigeonhole you into being that X-Men Evolution guy, because
there's things I can be pigeonholed in. I don't mind that.
Sure. But that's the thing that, and I may have mentioned this in the previous interview years ago, like I remember seeing X-Men Evolution showing up, or like the ads for it or something, and my head sort of like turning and being like, this looks different, and I tend to be a very visual sort of like comics guy. I don't know if it's something that I should be ashamed of, but I tend to look at the art first, you know what I'm saying? And I remember that the look of X-Men Evolution being very different from anything else out there at the time, and me being like, oh wow, this looks cool, and very much the way that, like, sort of like the Batman Bruce Timm, you know, series was when that appeared. It was like, oh, they're doing something different, you know, because you know, not to disparage animation, particularly at the time, like, what was it, the 90s that X-Men Evolution debuted?
The 2000s.
Okay, so maybe
coming up on our 20th anniversary.
Oh, wow. Sure. That's amazing. But that, you know, whatever you guys did with that cartoon or that show, it definitely made it stick out and was one of the big reasons that I watched it, you know, because I remember seeing it and being like, this looks different. And at the time, it seemed like there was so much animation that sort of, like, I don't want to say, like, worked off templates or looked the same. And obviously animation today is different, where you've got Netflix and other shows like popping up. But it just seemed like very, you know, like almost like sort of film animation, which I guess is where you come from, right? Can you speak to that at all? Or?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it too. You know, coming from features and stuff, I knew enough to go that way. But, you know, the default on superhero TV stuff is always to go template. I mean, you know, and I'm not putting it down. I understand it, and it's easy. I mean, we didn't want to do that. We wanted to stand out for that reason. And, you know, that's why Boyd pushed me. It was showing me that stuff and pushed me. And he didn't have to push too hard, believe me. When I saw that, I thought, this is great.
Yeah.
The only problem I had was, do I have enough time to do it all? Because, you know, I was doing, I was also directing at the time. Thankfully, what he did was he made me the last director on rotation.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there were three directors. I was and he put me in the third rotation, so I'd have more time leading up before I had to get knee deep into directing and stuff. So,
yeah,
worked out better. And, you know, he knew what he was doing, and we had a history together, and so we kind of, you know, once we got on the same page, which happened pretty quickly, it all went smoothly. So
I definitely, and, you know, to be honest with you, it's the look of the series, particularly in the beginning, where that's what I fell in love with, and I was like, that's why I have to, like, you know. And I've gone back, like, earlier this week and watched a couple episodes of, you know, the first season. And, you know, for me, the show really kind of took off, like, probably second season, third, you know, as it went on. But
the season was a little rough. We had a lot of growing pains. I'd say about midway the first season, you can see that we're starting to get it. We're starting to land on our feet, especially story-wise and what we're doing with it and stuff. The first few episodes, you know, we were still trying to figure out how to handle the entire production and stuff. And the writing was a little more haphazard and such.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I'm just saying, like, the visual aspect is what kept me engaged. The design of the characters, the way that they looked, the way that they sort of interacted with one another, you know. And for me, it was just, it's just always the thing that stands out. And a lot of that comes from your design, correct?
Thank you. Yes, I would think so. I mean, obviously, I wasn't doing backgrounds or anything or color.
Sure.
On that. But yeah, I think, I mean, for a long time, and I didn't realize this until I started going for jobs out other places and stuff, when I'd, you know, I'd get hired to do freelance on, like, Young Justice storyboards or something.
Sure.
You know, directors there would say, oh my God, I've got all your expression sheets and stuff from X-Men Evolution, and pinned up around here. You know, like, oh, really? I had no idea.
That's awesome. That's so great. Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely the look of that, and, you know, the Ultimates, you know, the Avengers, and stuff like that, that made me go, oh, there's something different going on here. And it's surprising to me how, I mean, I think it's different now. Again, like, animation has gone into, like, so many different looks and styles and stuff like that. But I was very, you know, thinking back, there were a lot of, like, animated TV shows where obviously there's differences between them. They're not all just, like, but where it seemed like there was a field of stuff where nobody kind of, like, wanted to stick out and be something different. And X-Men Evolution was definitely something like that.
Yeah, I think we, you know, that was our intent. Is, I mean, first off, we wanted to immediately throw down the gauntlet and say, we are not that 90s Fox show.
Gotcha. Okay.
And
Did you see that as a challenge, like the 90s Fox show?
Well, not so much as a challenge, some more as a, that's not us. That's not where we want to go with it. That's not our sensibilities. We wanted, to make it, and the one of the reasons why I was the character designer is, you know, I was an animator for years.
Sure.
So I knew what would animate well. Now, a lot of these other superhero shows that were designed by people who've never animated in their lives. So they had no idea whether or not stuff would move or what would happen with it.
Uh-huh.
And so I was able to put that into the designs. And if I felt I couldn't animate it, I wouldn't design it.
Okay.
So, you know, there was that. And also just we wanted to go against the obvious look of the characters. We could have just made them younger versions of, even though, you know, because they were the mandate was high school, we could have just made them younger versions of the exact same thing you'd seen previously in the comics and everything else, and we didn't want to do that. We wanted to come up with our own take on it and our own spin, and I think we were relatively successful with a lot of the characters. I mean, I've heard people tell me that, you know, and, you know, a lot of it was the design and a lot of it was how they were written too, but
sure,
people like Scott better than any other version of Cyclops. I mean, usually he's considered a stick in the mud and not very empathetic or anything else, and people really liked him as a person in our show. And I mean, people really got Rogue in a way that I don't think they ever got Rogue before.
Uh-huh.
You know, characters like that, you know, and I think, you know, it's clear that Wanda, our take on Wanda, which is wholly our idea, you know, to do her as the abused daughter and, you know, put in the mental asylum and stuff and hating her father to that large degree and wanting vengeance, you know, has become now part of comic canon at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, the straitjacket Wanda, you know, that's completely all part of what was so well accepted. I think the comics decided that they liked it too, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that there was like sort of a West Coast Avengers run, right, where she was kind of went nuts because her kids were like not, it turned out her kids were just made by her reality fabrication powers, but you're talking sort of like a deeper characterization element, correct?
Well, yeah, the idea that there was something broken about her.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to be honest, what we kind of picked it up from, I don't know if you're familiar with Buffy.
Sure, of course. How could I not be?
Yeah, okay, well, there was an episode of Buffy where she was in an asylum. Everything was in her mind, and we kind of took that nugget and said, you know what, that would be perfect for Wanda. That idea that she's been, you know, her father couldn't control her, and she scared the shit out of him because of her power, so he locked her up.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of that stuff we just kind of came up with out of whole cloth and whatnot. We were just, you know, playing, and because, to be blunt, you're probably much more versed in X-Men and Marvel Comics than we ever were.
Yeah.
Going with, like, you know, this makes more sense, you know, because we did have people on staff that knew stuff
about
comics and would kind of guide us and make sure we didn't completely get off track.
Yeah.
But we were just shooting in the dark a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, when I started this, I had no idea who Wolverine was.
That's amazing. Like, that's what I wanted to ask you. And, you know, I know we're coming up on an hour. And, you know, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but, you know, I want to be polite and respectful to your, to your time. But like, am I remembering correctly in the first interview we did, I think you had said that you had not necessarily read the X-Men or you weren't reading comics at the time that the show started or that you got put on. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I'd stopped reading them. It was X-Men in particular. I'd stopped, I think, after, you know, Kirby had stopped drawing them, if you can go back that far. I think I'd occasionally see, like, when Neil Adams kind of jumped back into it and kind of resurrected them to some degree.
Oh.
But I don't recall ever actually reading those comics. I think I just kind of got into something, other things or whatever. I think at that point I was reading books more. I was reading the Burroughs books and fantasy books and the Conans. And
gotcha.
So I'd kind of leapt from comics into those and hadn't really spent much more time going back into them. And, you know, I had to, you know, do a neat dive into the middle of the ocean when I started working on X-Men Evolution.
Were you reading, did they just like hand you a ton of comics or something, or were there runs that they were like?
I got a lot of the, you know, I'm trying to think. They were like these catalogs of characters and books that were done and stuff at one point. And yeah, and I'd read about the comics, and you know, like I said, we had people to kind of guide us and stuff. And at that point, even though Google didn't exist,
yeah,
there were still search engines and whatnot. So I do a lot of online browsing about and whatnot, and do some of that stuff. But you know, a lot of the characters we just instinctively, or at least we thought instinctively, knew how we wanted to go with them.
Sure.
You know, it was kind of like the breakout thinking process. Once we hit on the idea that Rogue was a girl who didn't want anyone, couldn't have anyone touching her, and she didn't want anyone touching her.
Yeah.
And she just, you know, was a goth girl and stuff. I mean, we realized, okay, this is how the template for how we want the other characters to play, where we come up with our own spin completely that makes sense for that particular character.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Wolverine before, and, you know, I'm going to have you on the show again before another 6 years, because I got like a ton of other questions I want to ask you about, like animation in general and the career in animation. But since we're on this track, so the first question that pops to mind is, A, what was your impression of the X-Men, not necessarily having been exposed to them and being like, you know, thrown into a deep dive of the mythology and all that stuff, you know, doing research? I was wondering if you can recall any of that. Were you like, this is bonkers, or like, this is amazing, or like, what happened? Like, what did I miss out on? And then sort of the last question I will serve to you, because I honestly think that the Wolverine design that you guys came up with for that show, as far as his costume is concerned, is the best, you know, costume Wolverine's ever had. And I love it. I have, you know, the statue in my office, and I just had to buy it, you know, when I came across one, because I was like, oh my God, like, that is the best Wolverine I've ever seen. And I just love the way that you guys posed him and stuff like that. What sort of approaches did you take as far as like when you looked at the costumes and went like, this is what we're going to do? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. One of the things I leaned into was, I think Ultimates was just starting to come out at that time.
Okay.
And I liked his sense that these costumes, these uniforms made sense.
Uh-huh.
Some sense it's like, well, they look like something that could be in live action or something. You know, ultimately they never used them, but you know, I think in the final films and stuff, they started to lean in towards that type of look.
Uh-huh.
I kind of like that idea. I thought, you know, why would a superhero who wants to move around fast have frilly things coming off of his costume and these weird flared boots that make no sense? And, you know, so one, to make it look very utilitarian and make sense as far as uniform and stuff. And like, okay, they're going to want something that works with their powers and works with their, you know, gives them mobility and stuff, as opposed to just, yeah, this is kind of a fun silhouette, you know, and just, you know, trying to get away from it. If I could have done away with the mask flares and stuff, I would have, but.
Oh, really?
There were certain things that, you know, we're locked into. You look at Logan's hair.
Uh-huh. I
got rid of the mutton chops. I got, you know, because I thought, no one wears mutton chops anymore. Now I guess it's become more of a thing, but it's still, back then it was not. And the whole hair thing, we had to kind of lean in a little bit and kind of give him those weird funky points, mm-hmm. on his hair to some degree, but I tapered them down, made them look more natural. But, you know, that was one of the few, we got very few mandates from Marvel, and that was one of them, is he had to have sort of the look of the hair.
Uh-huh.
They didn't quiz us too highly on it, so we didn't have to kind of give him the hair that looked like it fit under his mask, the exact same silhouette.
Sure.
But, you know, there's things like that, you know, costume-wise, I wanted to make it look like these are costumes that they could have put together themselves within reason, or, you know, made sense as far as what they would have been wearing. I mean, our original take on the costumes was we were going to do the original yellow and black jumpsuits from the Kirby days.
Oh, okay.
But we got kind of sidetracked from that for Marvel, one of the other few mandates they had. Said, no, no, we want individual costumes. Because at that point, it had to be a toy line. And if they were all wearing the same costumes, it would have made for a very dull toy line.
Sure, sure, sure.
They had to kind of come up with other things. But you, if you notice on the new mutants or the new recruits or whatever, that's exactly what we did. They all wore the same costume until they, one or two of them broke out and did other things like Boom Boom and stuff. We gave her a new costume. But
sure.
We like that whole idea that if they're going to this school to learn how to use their powers, they're not going to have individual costumes. They're going to wear the same jumpsuit, you know.
Sure, sure, sure. Sure. Yeah, and I mean, just going back to that first question, what was your impression of the X-Men once you were exposed to it?
Yeah, you know, what I really liked, and I hadn't gotten it from the original comics when I was reading it, maybe I either was just too young or it was very soft in it, is the whole idea that it was about race and bigotry, which I think the 90s show did a large degree of. I don't know if it was done in the comics. I assume it was.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
The show leaned into it very heavily. That show leaned into it, which is one of the things we liked about that show.
Sure.
And so that I thought was fantastic that they were found a way to do a bigotry comic, you know, racism and stuff without having to go specifically into it and make it more like a science fiction, how they used to do science fiction movies about things and communism and stuff and make it all sci-fi and stuff. So I thought that was very brilliant. I don't know if that was I don't think that was in the Kirby Lee stuff, but I might be wrong.
Well, I think Stan Lee, there's a lot of people that think like Stan Lee engaged in a little bit of like revisionist history, like, but you know, during the time those comics were created, right? You had Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think Stan Lee has said like, oh yeah, well, you know, Magneto was supposed to be Malcolm X and Professor X was supposed to be, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. and all that stuff. And so I think there were undertones of that. I don't think it got like super heavy handed on those subjects, which I appreciate, you know, as far as being like an X-Men and a comics fan up until like Chris Claremont, like really took over. I could be wrong, but
that's my general impression too. And without having reread those in years, obviously I couldn't speak authoritatively on it, but I that's my assumption, is that maybe some of it was like after the fact he could say that's what I was thinking.
Exactly,
it wouldn't be beyond Stan.
Well,
may have played into it, but you know, at that point they were still basically good guys versus bad guys, I think.
Sure, absolutely. So. absolutely. Yeah Well, you know, and do you actually read comics like now, or
I do a lot more of it, oddly enough.
That's great.
There are certain comic artists and writers that I will virtually read anything they do.
And who are those?
Well, Adam Hughes, anytime he does do a even if it's a short insert or something, I'll read that.
Sure.
But I like Stuart Immonen a lot.
Yeah.
Love his style.
Didn't he retire, though? I heard that he retired, last year.
Well, then you're more up on it than I am.
Oh, okay.
I've just always liked his stuff, especially his more comedic stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's Next Wave?
Yeah, we just did an episode on that, two or three weeks
ago. I'm always shocked that no one did anything more with that.
Sure.
And what else? And then there are writers like... that I really appreciate. I think Millar is great. And I think, some of them are hot and cold, but, you know, I'll always go check out like Garth Ennis, and I'll, you know, check out certain people. You know, King, I like a lot. I've just recently discovered a lot of his stuff. Tom King.
Cool.
You know, Snyder, I think, is good. I think he's done wonders for Batman and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh, wow, that's great.
Well, Snyder also, I don't know if you ever heard the story about the, what was he calling them? I did a series of children's books.
Yeah.
HarperCollins children's books and stuff. And Yeah, I guess he was reading them to his kids and realized that these two same characters kept cropping up. And I think he called them mystery hipster cops.
Okay.
And he discovered them, and it became kind of a thing for a while. So I always have a certain fondness for him for that reason.
That's great.
He found our little joke that was buried in these books and stuff. So.
That's great. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, so we've reached an hour. I really appreciate your time. I don't want to take up too much on a Sunday morning. You know, there's other things to do than chat with me. But, you know, I really have to thank you for your time and, you know, just thank you for your work. And, you know, I love your stuff. And, you know, anyone who ever sees you at a convention should go to your table because you're always nice to me and you're always super kind. And, you know, you know, I love your drawings and your sketchbooks and, you know, the statues that are based off your work. So, you know, I'm a big fan. So anytime you ever want to come back and just chat, I would love to have you on.
Sure. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And for anybody listening who has been listening, I've been on the line with animation, you know, jack of all trades, I should say. Stephen E. Gordon. Just again, I can't say enough how much I love your stuff. So this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. Thank you for listening. And you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And thank you, as always, for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye. Part-time fanboy.